Well, good morning, everybody. I am super excited to have our first official hearing coming to the representative. How you doing? Good to see you. So when our eyes lock, we just got to like, hey, I got to recognize that. So thank you. It's great to have a full table, everybody. I am honored to be the chair of the Workforce Committee in this very important session with some very important things that we need to address. I'm looking forward today, members, to hearing some overview from our partners at DEED and Department of Labor. We will get to know each other a little bit today. This should be a very easy day. And I'm looking forward to kind of understanding who is here. Some are new to this committee or new to this issue. I want to know kind of who those folks are. So with that, I think what I want to do, members, is I just want to say there's a quorum present, a big quorum present. I think everybody is here, and we don't have any action to take today or anything, so we are going to just move ahead to kind of get introductions, if that's all right, Mr. Lee. What I'll do is I'll go around the room. Let's do members first. I'll start with Representative Pozalski on that, and if I said that right, and if we could just start, we'll kind of come this way here for the members, then we'll come back to the staff. What area do you represent in the state? How many years you've been around? Anything you want to add? If there's something exciting that makes you want to get excited about getting up at 8:15, 3 days a week for this committee, love to hear that too. And but welcome everybody. So, Representative, go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Representative Lee Kozlowski. I represent the District 8B, beautiful Duluth, Minnesota, and I am so excited to wake up at get here at 8:15 in the morning. I have worked at the city of Duluth and in higher education, but also was raised by a grandma who was an educator on a pension that kept me and my cousins going strong every day. And so that is the work of here is making sure that we're serving the working people of Minnesota and having grown up in working class family and overcoming a lot of intergenerational poverty. I'm also really here as a co-chair of Posse Caucus with my fellow co-chair there to make sure that we have an economy that works for everybody as well. So happy to be here.
And good morning. Do you happen to have a name tag in front of you that we just don't see? If you could set it up, that would be easy for folks if we have that. So just set it up on top. Thank you.
Yeah, I will say that working with Building Services to get my name correct.
Okay, but
I
do okay. Thank you for that heads up. Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Representative Emma Greenman. I represent the beautiful Creek District, which is most of the Minnehaha Creek in Minneapolis, the southernmost side, 63B. This is my third term, and my third term on the Labor Committee, my second term on the Workforce Committee, and now it's just jobs, right? We should just call it jobs because it's too long of a name to get out in the elevator. This is my favorite committee, I think, and part of it is because I think that since I have been running, I'm a voting rights lawyer, but I've been hearing about our economy that is rigged against workers, against small businesses, against our communities, and really proud of the work we've done in the last three terms, particularly last biennium, about to level the playing field for workers, to keep folks safe and empowered on the job. So I'm looking forward to the work ahead.
Representative Johnson, take a little extra time. You're brand new here. So we've got one on our side as well. So looking forward to the Johnson boys when we get to those too. So anyway, welcome, Representative Peter Johnson. I'll try to make sure that I decipher that. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Pete Johnson represent District 8A, which is the central and western side of Duluth. This is my first term, obviously. My background, I've been a professional firefighter for the last 23 years, 19 of those years in Duluth there. I've been a union officer with our union for 17 years at the local level, been a vice president, currently a vice president with the State Firefighters Union. Representing the northern half of the state, and then I'm a service rep for international. So done a lot of work with labor over the years, realized the power and strength it delivers to workers and the voice it gives them in the workplace, and looking forward to advocating for those folks.
Welcome to the committee, welcome to the legislature, and thank you for your service for helping people. Representative Berg, welcome.
Thank you so much, Chair Baker and committee. Kayla Berg, I represent 55B, which is the heart of Burnsville. This is my third term. I come from the Labor Committee, so the workforce and economic development piece here is new to me. I have a background of 2 decades as a labor leader, and so you will hear me loudly and clearly advocating for and defending our workers. They are the backbone of this country and of this state, and I truly personally know what it's like to have my life changed economically by a union contract. So just be prepared for me to center workers in every conversation. Isaac and Mecklen know that about me, so happy to be here.
Thank you.
Everybody, Representative Cedric Frazier, District 43A, which covers Crystal and New Hope, so suburban guy. But I come here by way of Chicago, but I've been here a long time now. And I will say that, you know, this labor, I was on the workforce committee last biennium. That was my first time. Really enjoyed that. Long time advocate and server in labor. So this has been a long time coming to be on the labor committee. And I have a simple goal. Minnesota has one of the best economies in the country. I want to make sure that economy works for everybody.
Thank you. Lee Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, everybody. So Dave Pinto, representing the southwest part of St. Paul. I will say I'm not a morning person, Mr. Chair, so I'm going to do my best. I think it's Representative Schultz and Greenman and I all have 4 8:15 a.m. committees per week. So we may be swooping in at the last minute. We'll do our best. So I work as a prosecutor outside the legislature, but in that role, I'm a member of, I'm a member of a labor union, AASHTME, and I'm new to these policy areas, but have that background. Also have an MBA in addition to my law degree, and had worked on behalf of entities and organizations from large corporations to small businesses in that role, including growth stage companies. And so have some background in that area. You'll see me, Mr. Chair, members asking a lot of questions because I'm trying to learn a lot about these areas. There's a lot of really interesting and really important topics. And I will say for me, too, making sure that we have a state where everybody can thrive and participate is really important to me, as I've heard from my colleagues as well. Looking forward to the work of this committee to allow that to happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Appreciate it. My name is Dave Baker. I'm the chairman of this committee, and I'm a small business guy back in the Candiota County area. Those of you that have served in office, I have said that many times, either in committee or on the floor. I have about 30, 40 employees under my purview, and I'm honored to have been in business in Minnesota for 22, 23 years with my wife, Mary. Been in management for a long time. And like so many of us here, I think for me, I want to find that balance that we need for really protecting our labor friends, but also to make sure that they have a good job to go to. If we don't have a good employment base with good policy and fair rules, fair taxes, we can thrive. I think Minnesota does have a very good economy, but the trends are alarming to me. And I want to make sure that this session, we can really talk openly about both sides, about how we need to make sure that both are healthy, both are well stood up, both are ready for whatever comes at us. And because we have learned a tremendous amount over the last couple of years about what doesn't work and some big initiatives that are really good ideas. I think I will tell you that the DFL brought some very important issues to the table. What I have been struggling with is to make sure we get it right before things leave the gate, because we don't have a chance to fix it as easily once it's out the door. So my goal this year is to really talk about those ideas. How are they working? How are they affecting folks now in the world? And we're going to hear a lot of that this year, too. So I want to get it right. And I think that's my commitment to everybody, is we can't do much this year without working together, folks. And I'm really excited about that flag in the ground. We have to do it, or it's not going to get done. So I'm going to be part of that process, but I also want to be part of the solution about how we get this stuff done. So, again, thank you for being here. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was 4 of us that were on labor last biennium. So, Representative Berg, you are correct about that. Isaac and I are both very familiar with how you are. And passionate, actually. So I come from the trade background for the last 20-ish years. I represent Becker, the former home of Becker Furniture World, as we all knew it. Now it's Furniture Mart. Congratulations to the Huseby's. They apparently are retiring. Prior to that, I was in the petroleum industry, so I all in the small employer side of it, where they're all franchisees. I was a part of Texaco, Amoco, as a jobber for Amoco, as well as Holiday stations, with a couple of Culvers mixed in there. So I ate well back then. But also understand that the challenges that all these small businesses are facing, and, you know, there's obviously new economic dynamics coming forth. We're seeing a lot of changes. We're going to be hearing a lot about data centers this year. I'm looking forward to that conversation. So let's get to it.
Thank you. Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you. And I'm happy to be at Labor and Workforce. I was on the Workforce Committee last year, and I will be an 8:15er all week, too. So can't say that that's my jam, but that's what I'll be doing, too. So I've spent 40 years serving seniors, and I was from a CNA to a CEO and mostly a CNA all during COVID. So I am passionate about caring for our seniors in our community. I retired from that profession, and I was an entrepreneur also and built small settings across greater Minnesota. And I'm very committed to making sure we have a strong base in our community to have a strong economic platform for small businesses, which are the backbone of our communities across this entire state, that we model what we do here from an employer with one to a Fortune 500. And the district I represent isn't full of Fortune 500 companies, but it's full of small businesses. And in Two Harbors, if you have smart siding on your home or your garage, it's produced in Two Harbors, Minnesota. And the loggers up there are making that happen. And so I'm very committed to making sure that we continue to balance what we need to do and scale things for the businesses that want to be a business of one to a business of 1,000. And that's the Minnesota miracle, in making sure that we can have small businesses and large businesses thrive for a successful Minnesota, to make Minnesota affordable so businesses can thrive, whether they're small or big, and that we have jobs in the lanes for everybody. So thank you.
Representative Bueller.
Well, thank you, Chair Baker. And for those of you, this Representative Mueller from 23B, Austin, Minnesota, third term, several of you I came in with, and several of you I also served in public safety with, and now we're over here, so very interesting. Teacher for 20 years, have my master's and doctorate in education, new to this committee, but really excited to be able to talk about the partnerships that we can make between the public and private partnerships between our schools, making a more robust workforce, and making sure that we have appropriate opportunities for our kiddos to get real-life experiences and become the workers that our businesses need. Also to figure out how we can create multiple pathways so that we're able to kind of mitigate some of that crushing debt that we're seeing on our students. I live in an area where my district is in rural area, where my largest school district is 60% non-white, and it's because of our refugee and immigrant population that we have cherished so much in Austin. And so I want to see them achieve the American dream as well, as they continue to get rooted in our community and start their own businesses and start their own dream as they continue to work here. So really excited to be able to help not only the Hormels in my area, but also all of my minority small businesses as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Chair Baker. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent the communities of Prior Lake, Jordan, a portion of Shakopee, and then Spring Lake, Sand Creek, Jackson, and Louisville townships, so the surrounding townships. My background, I'm an educator. I graduated from college, started out as a teacher and a coach, was a member of Education Minnesota at that time, and then moved into administration. So I think I'm on my 19th year as some level of an administrator. So bring that perspective, and really wanted to be a part of this committee because I often in my principal role we would be brainstorming and looking at, okay, how can we meet the needs for kids, and you know, that's going to be my focus is how do we put things in place that set our future generations up to find their skills, find their passions. And in education, we talk about the three E's, education, enlistment, or employment. Mm-hmm. So that that employment piece is a really important piece for me. So how are those pathways? And I would often run into, frankly, terms I never heard and understood, deed and dolly. Well, deed and dolly say this. And I'm like, who is Deed and Dolly? I have no idea who this is. So my approach is going to be very simple. I think we need to have just common sense. And what do we do to help future generations be successful? So that's going to be my approach.
Thank you. Again, another brand new member. Welcome, Representative Wayne Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Baker. Yes, as mentioned, first term, 41A out of Washington County, Northern Park, Cottage Grove, Lake Elmo, Grant area. 4 years as county commissioner, 2 years as city council. Have owned my own business contracting company for 12 years, was also involved in management for 20 years, including 10 years as a union contractor. I was excited to be on this committee because I believed as a owner of a company that the balance has been forgotten about how employees need employers, employers need employees. Only when you have that good balance do you have a successful company. I feel down here in St. Paul, they have forgotten that we both need each other and that going too strong one way or another does hurt. And that we need to take that into consideration and how important big businesses start off as small businesses. If you put a lot of strain on small businesses, you don't have small businesses and you take opportunities for a better life from people. And I think that's wrong. So I just want to be here advocating for that and recognizing we both need each other, or both sides need each other, and looking forward to serving. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and I just got to say, for starters, I'm a little bit concerned about the consolidation of power on this committee in the city of Duluth. We have all three members here around this table, and no other city, including Minneapolis or St. Paul, is represented like Duluth. So
it's a great city.
I am Isaac Schultz. I represent House District 10B, which is in central Minnesota, including five great counties. I happen to live in Morrison. I also represent Benton, Mille Lacs, Kennebec, and Isani counties, and serving in my second term on this committee, it is and was my top choice, and excited to get to work here. My background is as an auctioneer in my family's small business, and I work as an independent contractor, and happy to bring those voices to this committee as we seek to bring balance, and that's what I think that this committee needs to be about, finding a way to balance supporting job creation in Minnesota so that all families and all small businesses can thrive in our state. And certainly, for me, my top priority is helping make Minnesota more affordable. And when we look at the last 2 years especially, but largely from government, what we see is the sorts of rules and regulations and mandates that we see that have frankly come from this committee in the past. It has forced many small businesses out of work, and it has forced consolidation across our economy that is not benefiting the people of Minnesota. So very concerned about that. For me, it's a largely rural community that I represent. So Main Street and the farming community are the people who I represent each and every day. And I just have to say, as I pass this to my colleague on my right, we're the Young Dad Caucus, as we were sharing photos of our little kids that are 3 years old and younger.
That's great. Welcome. Representative Hussein. Thank you.
Hassan is gone. Hussein is here.
Yes, Hussein, here we go.
Hold on. Good morning, and thanks for having me here, Chair Baker. And I welcome to Senate District 65, which you are in my Senate district. And I represent District 65A, which is Frogtown, Midway, and part of the Capitol in the Senate. And I'm here for us to work together and create jobs and opportunities for the state of Minnesota and protect works and laborers and unions. And as you can see, I'm sitting on the other side, and we are working together. That shows in the state of Minnesota we need to get along and do what's best for our state and for our people and create jobs and opportunity. and I was in the labor for the last 2 years. This is my second term, and I had a good time. Schultz and I was challenging a lot. We'll continue working together. Thank you for having me here.
And thank you so much, members, again. And again, as we move forward, feel free to mix it up where you want to sit. Please, I like that. If I could have an option, but I don't in this committee, I'll be here the whole time, unless somebody else is chairing the meeting. But again, welcome to everybody. Thank you, members, for sharing your thoughts today. I'm going to start off to my right, if I could, our committee legislative assistant. Ann, if you'd introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair Baker. My name is Ann T. Porton. I am the CLA for Representative Baker and Witte, or LA for Witte. Grew up on an Arabian horse farm in western Wisconsin, went to school in Duluth, go Bulldogs, and currently live in Plymouth. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Spencer.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Spencer Johnson. I'm the committee administrator for Chair Baker. I've worked in the little bit of the jobs and labor area before when I worked in the Senate for a while, but now I'm excited to be here in the House and work with all of you.
All right, Anna. Go ahead.
Chair and members, my name is Anna Shaleen. I'm from Nonpartisan Office, House Research. So if you need anything drafted for this committee, please get in touch. I'm happy to help you out. This is my ninth year serving various versions of the Jobs Committee.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ashley Eng. I'm a House Fiscal Analyst from the Nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis Department. My job on this committee is to track the budgetary decisions and request fiscal notes and present them upon request.
Thank Thanks. You. Travis, can you speak up or grab a microphone somewhere? I'd love to. Okay, thank you.
Travis Reese, DFL staff, committee administrator, power sharing agreement, all
mm-hmm.
that good stuff. I'm in my 17th session. This is now my seventh year in this version of jobs, labor, and I'm happy to be here with all of you.
Thank you. Is there a DFL researcher here too? If you would just want to stand and introduce yourself. Oh, David. Yeah, hey, Dave.
Chair Baker. There, David Sullivan with House DFL Research. I've been staffing various jobs committees in the House since I was a young man.
Attaboy. And also Indiana.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Indiana Smallman. I'm the GOP researcher. This is my first year with the committee and in the House. For the last 2 years, I was in L.A. in the Senate Republican Caucus.
I also want to recognize our page, Riley Jones. Riley is over here in the corner. Thank you for joining us, Riley. Again, we hope you're a morning person, too. We'll make it work. Yeah. Paige is on us. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's great to have you. Oh, and House Info. Yes, thank you for that.
Oh,
welcome.
Partisan House.
Okay. It's great to have you here. Thank you very, very much. All right. Welcome again. I'd like to invite our friends up from Deed. Commissioner, if you want to bring your team up and give us an overview of our Department of Economic Development. And welcome to the committee, Commissioner, and take your time to get set up there. As you know the process, introduce yourself, and you guys go ahead and process away.
Very good. Well, thank you, Chair Baker, Representative Pinto, members of the committee, and especially Representative Schultz. I think you're my representative, so great to be with you.
Yeah.
My name is Matt Verlich, and I have the honor of serving as Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and we're here to give you an overview of the agency. And I'm accompanied by three of our deputy commissioners, each of whom have responsibility for one of our programmatic areas, and they will, with your permission, present their portions of what we do. Starting out at a high level, this is what guides all that we do, and that is our mission. And as you can see, it's to empower the growth of the Minnesota economy for everyone. We always pause there. It's kind of a two-part effort to increase prosperity in Minnesota and to extend that prosperity to as many of our fellow Minnesotans as we can. And then at the bottom, you can see the values that we try to operate by. At a very high level, DEED, as you can see, is the state's principal economic development and workforce agency. We're proud of that, but I would also emphasize that we increasingly are seeking to work even better with our fellow agencies, including labor and industry who are here, and many others, on workforce development in particular, where multiple of those agencies do have resources devoted to that purpose. And the more we can work together and be aligned and avoid redundancy, the more we can do with those precious taxpayer dollars. We also are focused, of course, on business attraction, retention, and expansion from every phase of the life cycle. We've talked about the fact that Minnesota is a headquarters economy for Fortune 500s, but also I come from a small business background, worked at SBA, my dad's a small business owner, et cetera. And so fortunately, Deed has resources to try to help at all stages. And then we also are fortunate that our agency combines the workforce function and economic development so that we can be connecting workers to the needs of our employers and businesses in particular. And as you can see, we also help prepare individuals for jobs, not only in high demand industries, but also to help all Minnesotans, including those who may face disabilities, to live independently and find satisfying career opportunities. Just in terms of organizational structure, each of the four items listed at the left there are ones that are led either by a deputy commissioner or an assistant commissioner. As I mentioned, I have three deputies who have accompanied me today. Economic Development, Kevin McKinnon on my right, Workforce Services and Transformation, Evan Rowe on my left, and Workforce Development, Deputy Commissioner Mark Majors, who will join us at the table in just a moment. And then we also have Operations, not represented today, but they help to keep things moving at the office. And with that, I would pass it over to Deputy Commissioner Kevin McKinnon for Economic Development.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. And Mr. McKinnon, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Kevin McKinnon, the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development and Research at Deed. The Economic Development Division basically has four business operations, if you will. We have roughly 120 staff, primarily funded by general fund and general obligation bond funding, not so much federal money. I'll go into a little bit of that as we go through some of the business units. The first is the Business Community Development Division. This is the largest part of the group, essentially, but it works with businesses and communities across the state. Our business finance office, as an example, more than 25 different financial programs. Those range from grants to loans to tax credits. So if you think about the Minnesota Investment Fund, the Minnesota Emerging Entrepreneur Program, our Angel Tax Credit Program, our innovation grants for small businesses, et cetera, it all lies in this business unit. Essentially, they run a portfolio of loans, but also a variety of grant programs as well. Our business development unit essentially has three different businesses within it. First is our business development representatives. They are actually based in and around Greater Minnesota, so they work not only with businesses in the regions, but also with all the communities and helping them understand what programs and services might be available through the Economic Development Division and, quite frankly, Deed and other agencies as well. This also houses our workforce strategy consultants, where we work with businesses on some of their labor needs moving forward. It also has our Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program that pairs training with higher education institutions and businesses together, and our Energy Transition Office. Our small business development unit has expanded quite significantly over the past couple of years. This is where we serve a lot of the partnerships across the state. So if you think of our Small Business Development Center program, if you think of our Small Business Assistance Office, our Child Care Office, our Partnerships Office, where we work with a variety of nonprofits that serve communities all across the state, that all resides in this office and basically serves to connect entrepreneurs to the resources that they need. Whether those be resources within Deed or other partners from a financial perspective, or just the assistance that people need with business planning, marketing assistance, et cetera. then our community finance group. This works with communities on redevelopment, on infrastructure programming. Our small cities program works out of this office. A lot of the bonding projects that you may pass in a biennium all comes through this office. And so altogether in this group, there's roughly about 60 people. Not a lot of people, but a lot of money runs through this part of the Economic Development Division. The Minnesota Trade Office is another business unit that resides in the Economic Development Group. This works to increase basically the number of Minnesota companies that export. We want more companies selling products across the globe. They're worth more. They generally cost more to make, which requires higher skills at the local level, which means higher wages, et cetera, for people that work there. So this office provides technical assistance to businesses to help them export, connections all across the globe, whether that be through the federal government's supports or connecting with governments all across the world. This group also helps promote foreign direct investment. So a lot of our companies in Minnesota actually do have ownership and headquarters in other countries. And quite frankly, over the past number of years, we've seen an increase in this area. And a lot of companies in our state continue to get foreign investment and continue to grow here in Minnesota as a result of that. And finally, in order to support our businesses not only here but also to promote foreign investment, we have offices in various countries across the globe that not only help connect those businesses to potential markets, but also to help businesses in those countries identify and, quite frankly, think about Minnesota when they consider the United States for an investment destination. Our Office of Broadband Development, you've probably heard a lot about this in the last number of years, but we've had this office since 2014. A lot of state money has actually been invested in expanding border-to-border broadband over the last 10, 12 years. More recently, the federal government has come in with the Broadband Investment Act, and essentially we're working to deploy about $650 million from the federal government. But nonetheless, this has been a priority for our agency and for the state for a number of years to ensure that individuals and businesses all across Minnesota have access to broadband. This group also coordinates our broadband task force, which essentially helps advise the legislature, the governor, et cetera, on what's going on in broadband industry. As I mentioned, the federal resources that we are hopefully going to receive here relatively soon for additional broadband expansion across the state. And then, of course, we do a lot of mapping and data collection in this area to understand where are our gaps and where are the most where are the areas of the state that need the service the most. And finally, our economic analysis and labor market information area. This area you're probably familiar with it the most. Every month we release our unemployment rate and other labor market and economic conditions across the state. This is the group that essentially does most of this research. Primarily, this is federally funded. We work with the Bureau of Labor Statistics at the federal government level, basically to help produce the information that's needed, which essentially helps our Workforce Development Division identify those jobs in demand and identify potential training needs, et cetera, for businesses that are growing, and essentially helps with the skill development and informing our career force centers as to what training is needed in the market. So with that, I will turn to our Workforce Services Division and Deputy Commissioner Rowe.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKenna. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Rowe. Please introduce yourself and carry on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Evan Rowe. I am Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Services and Transformation at the Department. Workforce Services is a kind of collection of programs that have a blend. You know, generally there's a mix of federal and state funding involved. And I guess I would kind of the overarching umbrella here are programs that support Minnesotans in transitions to employment and trying to get re-engage folks with the labor force as when they have gaps in employment. So I'll go through each program in sequence. The first is vocational rehabilitation services. This is a program that assists Minnesotans with disabilities in preparing for, finding, and keeping work and helping them with independent living. So, you know, essentially this provides employment-related services to thousands of Minnesotans with disabilities each year who seek competitive, integrated employment in the workforce. It also provides pre-employment transition services to students with disabilities across the state. State Services for the Blind is also part of our agency. State Services for the Blind assists Minnesotans who are blind, deafblind, losing vision, or have a print disability to find and keep employment. In a similar manner to VRS, they offer tools and training for employment, for living independently, and for accessing print media in their work. And the objective is to help Minnesotans live, work, read, and succeed, which I believe rhymes. Paid leave, I think this will probably be the only time we discuss this program in this committee this session. Paid leave, when it launches on January 1st, 2026, will provide job protections and partial wage replacement for individuals who are unable to work due to a qualifying condition in law. Minnesota will be the 13th state to implement paid leave. And essentially, qualifying conditions last more than 7 days, and a healthcare provider or a designated professional must certify the need for leave and the amount of time. We look forward to sharing our updates as we go through the session. Unemployment insurance pays eligible workers up to 50% of their average weekly wage, subject to state maximum for up to 26 weeks, and this is for workers who have left the workforce for no fault of their own. They work closely with our Career Force Division to ensure that workers have the assistance that they need to quickly return to employment, and we provide resources to help with that. And I would say Minnesota UI regularly ranks among the top 5 states in the country in achieving across a panoply of performance standards. And then finally, Disability Determination Services is tied to the Social Security Administration. They serve Minnesota residents who file applications for disability benefits, generally SSI and SSDI, if you're familiar with those federal programs. And they also will review kind of continuing eligibility claims for those programs. They refer disability applications for individuals who may benefit from rehabilitation services to other state agencies to try to re-engage folks with the workforce as possible. And DDS, worth noting, is 100% federally funded, but it is administered at the state level and across all the other 50 states, or the other 49 states. So with that, I will pass it to my colleague, Deputy Commissioner Mark Majors, for workforce development.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Majors.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Mark Majors. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development. It's good to be here with you today to provide you an overview of the workforce development services that are provided at DEED. I'll jump into it. Okay. Under workforce development, we have four key areas, employment and training programs, career force programs, career one-stop, and also our Office of New Americans. For employment and training programs, essentially our employment and training programs is our grant-making arm for workforce development at DEED. We oversee roughly about 600 grants and work with almost about 300 community-based organizations, local workforce development area programs throughout the state of Minnesota. Our key component of programs are federal dollars, which run through the work Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. Excuse me, I'm not a morning person. The Title I program, which oversees the adult, youth, and dislocated worker funds. In addition, other federal programming that we oversee is what we call our Senior Employment Community Employment Program as well. The team oversees state-funded programs that you may be familiar with, and on our adult, it's our Adult Career Pathways team, which does an excellent job of delivering our grant system for Pathways to Prosperity, Southeast Asian, also Women Economic Security Act, and many other grants that are provided through the state. And let me just kind of highlight, these state funds are extremely important to our state's workforce development program. Over the last 5 years, we've seen an incredible decrease in federal dollars. This year, we're projected to see a decrease of about $2.5 million for our adult, dislocated worker, and youth programs. So these funds that you all provide play an important part for our our public workforce system. In addition to our state programs, we also have relationships with partners we call public-private partnership. One is with Xcel Energy, which we just graduated a class of about 70 folks last year. These are funds that help put people into energy-related jobs throughout the state of Minnesota. We're hoping to see some more in public-private partnerships like that. In addition, another public-private partnership we had this last year was with the Wilson Foundation, as well as the Margaret Cargill Foundation, in delivering clean energy training throughout the state of Minnesota. Our Career Force Center system, which is also our American Jobs Systems. We have approximately 55 centers across the state that deliver services to any individual who walks through the door. And those services range from just using a computer all the way to going to our more training programs. And then connections to jobs. We work with both job seekers as well as businesses. So, for example, if a business is looking for individuals to fill whatever vacancies they may have, they can go into one of our Career Force locations and talk to the staff there and identify what the need, and they'll identify what the needs are, and there will be some job matching that will go there. In addition, they'll be able to talk about workforce tax credits, federal bonding programs, and other services that can be provided to employers. And then for job seekers, again, it's the assessment, it's the looking at LMI data that Deputy Commissioner McKinnon talked about, and then putting people into training and with the whole goal of putting them into one of our vacancies that we have in the state. In addition to those basic services, we also offer job services to veterans across the state as well. And it, as well as we have services for reentry, so folks that are coming home, we provide services to those individuals. Minnesota was very successful in the last 2 years to actually receive a federal grant of about $10 million to provide services to Minnesotans that are actually in our federal correctional facilities. So we're really, well, we're not excited why we have those funds, but we're excited to have those funds. And then lastly, during the last legislative session, the legislature invested at about $1 million a year for employer engagement services for our Drive for Five industries that we have in Minnesota. So those are the services under the Career Force team. Then, moving on to our Office of New Americans, which is an incredibly important office to our state. It was codified in 2023. The office plays a critical role, as well as our New Americans do. New Americans play a very important role to our state's economy. They're the folks that come here. They contribute to our labor force. And in fact, they're about 50% of the labor force that are the new labor force that's coming into our state's economy, pay taxes, start businesses, and contribute to the overall society. This office plays an incredible important role in that it convenes many of the enterprise partners to discuss some of the issues that are facing some of our new Americans to our states. It works with employers to help them identify how to recruit and also employ new Americans in our state. And then it also works with job seekers to make sure they have the tools so that they can enter our workforce. So our Office of New Americans, which is ran by our Assistant Commissioner Mohammed, has done an incredible job over the last 2 years, and we're very happy that he'll be hiring new staff, two more new staff that's necessary during these important times in our state's history. And then Career One Stop. This is an office that actually used to sit under Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, but this is a national platform that is ran by, that we run on behalf of the Department of Labor. We're the only entity in the country that runs the Career One Stop, and it essentially works as an online American Jobs Center. Again, you can go online, you can access any services that you may be able to access through some of our Career Force Centers, which is looking at programming anywhere from youth to juvenile justice to senior programs, assessing what the individual skill sets are, as well as also pointing people to those high growth industries that we have through in the state. Well, actually, I always forget, this is a national program throughout the country. So it's delivering all the states across the U.S. as well as our definitely other territories. So this is the Workforce Development Program, and I will turn it back over to Commissioner Verlich.
Great. Thanks, Deputy Commissioner. So just two last items, and then we'd be happy to take any questions. First, one other function that is in the Commissioner's office and has kind of an agency-wide role. As I mentioned at the top, DEED has significant workforce development resources, but so do other partner agencies, and hence we are playing a coordinating role in trying to align those efforts. Partly that happens via the Governor's Workforce Development Board, which provides leadership and coordination on workforce strategies for the state. And the GWDB is actually quite large, I think, what, 50-some members?
62.
62 members, which includes significant private sector representation. And then we also have an interagency workforce alignment effort coordinated also by the same person who leads the Governor's Workforce Development Board to go a little bit deeper on some of the interagency efforts to make progress on workforce development. And then this is something that is important at all times, and particularly now when there is additional attention on waste, fraud, and abuse, and so we wanted to proactively note that this is a priority for us. As you can see, we view our anti-fraud efforts as robust and tailored for each of the various programs administered across the agency. As you've heard, each of the three programmatic areas that we have, led by the Deputy Commissioners, you can see that we serve quite a wide range of entities in the state, of course, touching really every Minnesotan in a certain way. But in some instances, it is a program for individuals, as in the case of unemployment insurance or Voc Rehab. In other cases, Mark's ETP division would be making grants to nonprofits, and so we need a different set of measures in those cases. And then in the case of Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, lots of work with businesses. And so, again, the measures that we take on the front end in terms of evaluating whether an organization or a person is in good standing legally, and then putting grant agreements in place that align with whatever language is governing in that instance, and then making sure that we are getting proper records for what expenditures have been made and to make sure that those are in alignment with what was agreed, and then doing ongoing reporting, monitoring, et cetera. It's a wide range of activities that we undertake that is tailored to each of those circumstances. All in all, we are proud that we have a strong track record at DEED of preventing fraud and then also striking that balance of efficient and rapid delivery of services to the people of Minnesota and the organization of Minnesota, because, of course, we will often hear from members who are eager for us to get funds out as quickly as we can. And in some cases, the reason something hasn't maybe happened quite as fast as we would all like is because we are making folks jump through the necessary hoops to ensure we're protecting taxpayer funds. So trying to always strike that right balance We feel good about our track record, and yet always acknowledge that there is more that can be done, and so look forward to having that conversation with you. And then finally, I would add that we are, of course, pleased with the governor's executive order to strengthen some of these measures across the enterprise. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions. Thanks for everybody's attention.
And thank you, Commissioner, and Deputy Commissioners, thank you for that overview. I've got a couple just maybe overall comments, and then I welcome questions from the members. Something I'd like to do this year is dive a little bit more into the career force centers around the state. I think that would be Mr. Major's area, I think. I know I really enjoyed my visit back in Candiway County. I learned a lot. I was there 10 years ago for the last time when I just kind of was getting into my groove here and wanted to see what it was like, but a lot changes over a decade of what employment services look like today. What I would like to analyze at some point down the road, and I'm not saying this is a high priority right now, but because the employment, the employees or the folks that are unemployed are looking for some different reasons of either finding work or not finding work. I gained a real insight by talking to folks at home about who are they serving and their challenges in front of them. So I want to at some point just kind of talk about that more on a statewide level. What you're seeing, who's coming in, what is the foot traffic like today, what has happened over the period of time. Just, I think this committee just should know kind of where are the investments that we have out in all of Minnesota and how are we seeing those trends a bit change and where do we need to focus on what type of services we need to offer. So just that'd be a goal of mine down the road. Commissioner, you mentioned again the fraud work and the prevention of that. I know we were here for the last 2 years directly appropriating a lot of dollars to a lot of workforce projects, to some brand new nonprofits. Some have been well established. And I know that with my deep work with the Opioid Council, we are doing the same thing there. We are clunky and slow to get money out because we have to go through all of the protocol to make sure we get that. What I'd like to know again, and maybe it's too early to report this without asking you ahead of time, initially last 2 years has been a real bubble when it came to in spending with those nonprofit workforce ideas. Generally, I would assume all the dollars have been executed and signed and are out the door. Are you seeing, was there any initial problems with some? I'm not looking for any identifiers, but just of all of those, because it was a very large number. You were put under a lot of pressure in the last couple of years to get those dollars out. Did you find that we, after the legislator did appropriate some, that you found that the I's weren't dotted, the T's weren't crossed, and you had to pull some back in? What was that generally like, if you have an area to way to comment on that? And if you don't, I understand. I didn't ask you that in advance.
Commissioner? Well, I'd be glad to offer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to offer just a few thoughts, and then I might invite Deputy Commissioner Majors as well, since it was his area that did all that hard work. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting for me to have arrived in June of 2023. I was aware in theoretical terms that it's not always like that. That not all deed commissioners are fortunate to have that scale of resource to deploy. And it was a challenge for us to deliver those funds in an efficient fashion and make sure that we were dotting all the I's. One thing that Deputy Commissioner Majors has talked about is that the team, particularly the Employment and Training Programs team, which is primarily the grant-making arm within his unit, paced out the various RFPs, I think it was maybe 12 of them, because in some cases you would expect maybe the same nonprofit organization to apply for more than one of our programs, and so that they didn't all face a crush all at once, and likewise so that we were able to pace out our resources, that they you know, had a schedule where they released them over time. And it is true that many of the applicants, for example, we would find were not even eligible. They were not in good standing. They didn't necessarily propose something that was allowable under the various programs, and so they were knocked out. And then when it comes to direct appropriations, also another category separate from the 12 competitive grant programs that Deputy Commissioner ran, In the vast majority of cases, those went smoothly, but once again, it was kind of an all-hands-on-deck effort where we were drawing in people who normally don't do that kind of work, but just to make sure we got it done as quickly as possible. And yet, despite all that effort, there were some instances where the nonprofit just had a different view about what they intended to do with the dollars that we felt was at odds with what the language said that you wrote and which the governor signed into law. And so there are times when we'll go back and forth and back and forth. And in some instances, I think maybe that is still not fully resolved. But those are certainly the exceptions and not the rule.
Thank you. Mr. Majors.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yes, I think what the commissioner says is absolutely right. First, I'll start with any grants, whether they're direct appropriations or competitive grants, they do go through an initial risk assessment. And that the point of that is to determine whether or not the agency is and has the fiscal infrastructure and to administer the grants. And so in case, so we will usually, regardless of the direct appropriation or a competitive grant, we will look at that first to determine that. So as the commissioner mentioned, yes, there will be times when we find some agencies that just may not be ready for those dollars. And then at that point, we will not enter into a grant agreement at that point. That's one of the safeguards that we have, or guardrails that we have up at the front. And that will kind of sometimes will delay the process. If they're, for instance, for example, we'll look at their, if they've submitted their UI paperwork. If they haven't done that, we'll work with them to understand whether or not they're prepared to do that and give them some time in order to actually, before we issue that grant. But generally, where we do find is that we just will not fund an organization that's just not, that does not meet our requirements at the front end. And then during the course of the grant period, we do conduct monitoring. And if we find that the grantee is not meeting the mark, they're not meeting their performance goals, then we go through measures to try to right track them and provide that technical assistance and hopefully not get to a point where we have to remove the funds from them. But for the most part, again, majority of the dollars, I say probably about 98% of those dollars are out. But there may be some circumstances where we've had to hold because we're working with that agency to make sure they have these their paperwork in place before we can move forward.
Thank you. Members, Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for presenting, Chair Baker. my district, employment and wage, money of the household in my district 65A, especially Frogtown, reported earning less than $14,000 for their household annual. What specific strategy or program does DEED have to promote job creation and raise wage economically disadvantaged areas such as my district? Is there any skills or any opportunity, because I don't see any workforce in my district? How do we collaborate and work with those and give a training? Because when you look at in the state of Minnesota, in my district, the poverty, you know, like the lowest, other than see the riverside, what plan do you have for targeting for those disadvantaged communities, Mr. Commissioner?
Yeah,
Commissioner.
Thanks, Representative. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I certainly appreciate some of the statistics that you just mentioned, and that there are parts of Minnesota that are doing really well and other parts where we certainly need to keep on working to improve opportunity and improve outcomes. I do remember when I was brand new in the job, we announced one round of grants in your district. I think it was at Youth Track through the Youth at Work program. And I think that is a great example of something that holds strong promise. You know, that's a case where it was a program, it is a program, working with young people, a diverse collection of young people who maybe haven't had exposure to the full range of great career opportunities that exist in this state. We have such a highly diverse economy that almost anything a person would want to do, you can find a job in that field here in this state. And yet, if you have not had an opportunity to learn about those jobs, then you wouldn't know to make that your aspiration. And then once you have that aspiration, do you have the skills to, you know, fill out a resume and engage in interviews and all those kinds of things? And that's what the Youth at Work program is about. And so I think that's an important one. Deputy Commissioner McKinnon talked about small business programs. We want, of course, to create every opportunity for people that have an idea to launch a for-profit business to be able to do that. We have small business development centers where people can basically walk in the door for free in lots of locations across the state and get help with the business plan and other resources. And then acknowledging that even the SBDC network has its limitations, we have a complementary program, the Small Business Assistance Partnership, where we provide grants to nonprofits, including community development financial institutions, CDFIs, federal designation. But basically, that's little banks that go where the mainstream financial system won't go. And that one is near and dear to me because the organization that I used to run in Morrison County, with a 14-county service territory in central Minnesota, the Initiative Foundation, is a CDFI, and it is part of a network of those little banks, nonprofit ones for the most part, around the state that try to fill in the gaps where banks and credit unions haven't met the full needs of entrepreneurs. And then hopefully as people get their businesses off the ground, they can move into the mainstream system. And lots of other programs I think that you just heard about also have relevance for folks in your district, and we could go into more detail, but those are just a few that come to mind off the top of my head.
Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I appreciate it, but those people do not have an internet or do not have transportation or do not have a lot of accessibility and the trainings that they need. Is your plan to put kind of like a workforce for those people that disadvantaged, and that's what I have been asking for the county and the state to provide for jobs and skills because they don't have a lack of computer, they don't have a how to do their resumes. So those are the trainings, and is there any plan for those disadvantaged community to open kind of like a workforce?
Commissioner.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just mention one thing on that and maybe turn to Deputy Commissioner Majors as well. I think the portfolio that you just heard us talk about, you know, that reflects the tools that the legislature has given us, and so we're trying to deliver those as efficiently as we can. And it reflects a mix of delivery mechanisms to reflect the fact that in some cases people still do not have reliable internet, or they might not have the equipment to use the internet. And so that's why we're proud to be the home of the Office of Broadband Development, which is working towards that goal of universal access. But even so, some people might not like to access resources in a digital way, and they still see benefit in the face-to-face interaction like we're having here. And so that's why we still have also a network of Career Force centers, Mark said 55, around the state. Likewise, in-person small business development centers where you can get that help, the Small Business Assistance Partnership, where we give those grants to the nonprofits. They do in-person, in many cases, culturally tailored entrepreneurship training, for example, through Neighborhood Development Center and others. And so our strategy to a large degree has to be confined within the bounds of the programs that are funded by all of you. And yet we are deploying them, I think, in ways that target the individuals you're talking about and, you know, seek to address historical inequities. That remains a key value and a key goal for us at the department. Deputy Commissioner, what would you add?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I kind of piggybacking on what the commissioner mentioned is that we have almost 27 different types of workforce development programs in the state of Minnesota that run across, you know, from border to border. I will say that sometimes there are times when folks in different communities are not aware of the workforce development services in those areas. And I would be glad to work with you or anyone else to talk about the services that may be in your area and then talk about a way that we can convey and put the message out into communities about the services that are available. Not only to the centers that the commissioner talked about, the 55 centers, but we also deliver services in about 75 libraries across the state as well, so that we can do, you know, more outreaches as far out as we possibly can. And those are institutions that have computers and have access to computers. So we're putting staff there to assist individuals as well. But we do know in some communities that folks are just not aware of all the workforce services that are there. So we'll be glad to work with you and partner with you on getting the word out.
Any follow-up, as Representative Hussein? And to your point, I had a great visit with the Union Gospel Mission here a few weeks ago. I assume that's the senior district as well. And really nice understanding of what they do, how they do it. But if you are not seeing it happening now, with all the services that, again, have been sort of shared today, after the enormous amount of money that went out the last 2 years, if you're not seeing it today, there's a big disconnect somewhere. Because if you're not seeing it today, you never will. Because of the incredible investment that this state made to try to get to everybody who's looking for a job, who needs very basic skills, everything from GED to resume building to setting up interviews. I mean, I have been really looking at that model a lot. And if we've got folks not seeing that, then we need to do a better job connecting with them. So I love to sit down some more and talk about what's going on in this area, because there's something being missed there. So I appreciate your comments very much, Representative. And final question, then we're going to move on to the Department of Labor. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate, I think, that question, because as we think about this, a budget year, and we're going to be thinking a lot about our budget, and I think in the we have had the benefit of having a very low unemployment rate. I'll say, I think, an economy that feels like it keeps a lot of workers at the bottom is not just this committee, but is a lot of different committees. But in the last 3 weeks, we've seen a lot of very chaotic policy decrees about freezing funding, about tariffs. And my guess, and thinking about you all, who really are the place where, when we think about our workforce, when we think about the investments we make, when we think about small businesses who might be most affected, I'm sort of interested, and I think this committee really needs to understand that changed landscape. One thing that just caught my ear, which is a relatively small thing in the whole scheme of things, but is when we think about the broadband investment that I think has been a state priority, has been a federal priority, I'm wondering what we would do without that federal, those federal resources. I know particularly small businesses and individuals in greater Minnesota are very anxious to make sure that we get that done. But I know I'm interested in that. And then I'll just, in the interest of sort of asking all my questions, on the workforce side and the small business side, the impact of these tariffs that especially Canada, but Canada and Mexico, how do we think that'll impact the small business environment, the workforce, and sort of the unemployment rate? And what should we be thinking about as we go into this budget session about what Minnesota can do or how we can mitigate the things we can't control at the federal level?
And to that, Commissioner, again, I appreciate the comments. I think I want to make sure that we're careful not to get too wound up about the federal words that are being thrown around. Nothing is in place yet. It is a little wonky, you're right. But I want to say, I want to make sure that we control what we control here, and the what-ifs and the how-comes. And again, yesterday in Ways and Means, they were very careful not to talk about what the projects or the projections look like, because nothing is really set in law yet. And so I understand your comments. I just want to make sure that I'm going to keep us focused on what we can do in the state without always kind of going to that area where it seems like we don't know what they're doing, because they don't know what they're doing. I just want to, you know, keep it where we can focus on what we are doing here in Minnesota, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Chair Baker. And to that end, I think that it would be helpful to know what can we do and what can't we mitigate from, because to your point, there is only so much we have control over, but we also are a state budget that obviously can't replace the federal budget. So that piece would be helpful, too. Thank you,
Commissioner.
Chair Baker, Representative, thanks for the question. It's a very important one. And the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general have spoken, I think, pretty forcefully on this, especially on the day when the federal funding freeze was announced. And one thing that I think stuck in my head from then was that maybe on a monthly basis, it's something like $2 billion of federal funds that come our way. And hence, if there were a significant interruption of that, it's just simply something that we cannot cover for very long, certainly. And if we look at DEED in particular, lots of our programs that you just heard about do in fact have a federal component, whether it's disability determination services with Social Security, unemployment insurance, Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, a lot of the career force activities, et cetera. And then broadband, as you mentioned, $652 million. That's a whopper for us and critical to getting to those households and businesses that don't yet have service, including especially in greater Minnesota locations, which is where that problem remains the largest. And that's one where we have spent, I don't know how long it's been, Kevin, over a year. Well, regarding pursuing the BEAD funding, you got to jump through a lot of hoops in that one to actually access the funds, and we are making good progress on it. And for that not to materialize ultimately would be very difficult to cope with. And something that you will just often hear in business circles is that uncertainty is unhelpful, and we're finding that to be true with respect to implementing programs and running a department as well. There is a lot of uncertainty right now. It causes angst amongst the public that we serve. It causes angst amongst our staff. And we can't speculate about what the impacts of all these things will be, but having clarity about what process will be followed in order to implement federal changes, I think that is helpful because some of the worries resulting from actions in the recent weeks haven't helped our cause in terms of serving Minnesotans.
And I want to say thanks. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Greenman?
No, I was just, I guess, a follow-up for all of us, because I do think we create a biennial budget, and I feel like the last 3 weeks have shown us you can sort of throw everything up in the air, especially at the federal level. And so we have, I feel like since I've been on workforce, we've and labor, we have had the benefit of weathering the pandemic and coming out with, I think, the lowest unemployment rate in the country. And so been able to focus on things like how do we create more opportunities, create more small business environment. And I just remain, we don't legislate in a vacuum. And so I think as we think about how we do that work, it's really going to have to be an omnipresent thing, apparently, given what's happening every day at the federal level.
Thank you. Commissioner and testifiers, thank you for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll see you as well around the committee hearings this year. So thank you very much.
Thank you as well.
Members, we're going to have our partners from the Department of Labor come to the table. Give us that overview. We've got about 30 minutes left, members, so we want to keep an eye on the time. I do want to make sure that we end our committees either earlier or right on time, or we will certainly, if we need to, we'll go into evening sessions, too, if that's going to be required this year. But very happy to have the commissioner here today for labor. So we'll get him, let him get set up. Morning, Commissioner. How are you today?
Good morning, Chair Baker. I am doing well. I
Good.
Hope you're all doing well as
Great
well.
Great to have you here. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Chair Baker and members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I serve as the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. It is great to be back and to see so many returning faces as well as all of the new faces that are joining this committee, and I look forward to working with each and every one of you. Josiah is going to handle the PowerPoint for me, but I do want to just quickly recognize the folks from the Department of Labor and Industry who are in the room with me. Not going to come up unless I need them for help with questions, but Deputy Commissioner Kate Peruschek, Assistant Commissioner Jessica Stimmick, Assistant Commissioner Christy Swanson, Legislative Director Josiah Moore, and our CCLD Assistant Director and State Building Official Greg Metz. So I'm going to start out with just by acknowledging in the committee materials today, we have included an agency overview one-pager, which is actually two sides of one page, but it's a great high-level overview of all of the work that the Department of Labor and Industry does. Also, our operating areas are listed on this first slide. The Department of Labor and Industry's mission is to ensure that Minnesota's work and living environments are equitable, healthy, and safe. And our vision is to be a trusted resource and impartial regulator for employers, employees, property owners, and other stakeholders. So this first pie chart that you'll see is an indication of where our funding comes from within the department. So this is the source of our funds. The next PowerPoint you'll see is how our base budget is allocated. But as you'll see from this first pie chart, we are 52% of the source of the funds at the Department of Labor and Industry are from the Workers' Compensation Fund, which is formed from an assessment on insurers and self-insurers that are active in Minnesota. The second largest is our Construction Codes Fund, and this is a fund that is funded by revenue from licenses, permits, inspections, all for work performed by the agency. And you'll see a couple of other areas, Workforce Development Fund, Contractor Recovery Fund. 6% of our funding comes from federal funds. And then the general fund is a small fraction of our overall revenue funding to the agency, coming in at about 6%. So the next slide represents where our base budget is appropriated throughout the different divisions and units within the agency. You'll hear a lot more about our different divisions, but you'll see the largest proportion of our money goes to the Construction Codes and Licensing Division. Then in the Work Comp Division, we have a slice of the pie that both goes to workers' compensation benefits that are paid out to individuals and reimbursement to insurers, as well as the administration costs for our Workers' Compensation Division. We also have apprenticeship, labor standards, general support, OSHA, both compliance and consultation, and then our employment-based initiatives and the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, all represented in our budget.
Sorry, thank you. My question here, Commissioner, at sometimes you also have OSHA fines and people have broke the law and done some dumb things. You collect revenue. Where does that go? Does that go back into this fund? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the answer is it depends. So our CCLD penalties go to the assigned risk safety account. Work comp penalties go to the assigned risk safety fund. Labor standards penalties go to the general fund. OSHA penalties go to a non-dedicated work comp fund. So it depends on what area of the department you're talking about, but it's one of the primary things we do as a regulatory agency is enforce laws and regulations, and when we do collect those penalties, they come back to the state in different ways.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into each of the divisions that we have within the agency, and I will talk about workers' compensation first. The Workers' Compensation Division helps employees who are injured on the job to receive proper medical treatment and benefit payments in a timely manner. They mediate disputes about injuries and benefits. They issue penalties for late benefit payments to injured employees and review records to ensure state laws are followed. One of the things that I've really tried to move towards this year with the agency overview is giving a little bit more practical implication of the work that we do at the department. So we have a few highlights that I will provide related to our Workers' Compensation Division. So this first highlight is bringing attention to the work of our Vocational Rehabilitation Unit, Voc Rehab. And I know Deed went before me and they talked about some vocational rehabilitation they do. Our unit within workers' compensation is really focused on workers who are injured on the job, so has that work comp tie. But in this highlight, VRU provided return to work assistance for an injured worker who lived in Greater Minnesota and was limited to drive within a 10-mile radius due to severe concussion that happened at work. She worked with one of our qualified rehabilitation consultants who provided medical management services, vocational counseling, and a referral to a placement team. The placement team provided job-seeking skills, training, and supported her in her job search along with her qualified rehabilitation consultant. the vocational rehabilitation unit staff, coached around how to request accommodations when looking for employment, and numerous barriers were successfully addressed, and the injured worker returned to work as a paraprofessional for a local school district. And this is just an example of how when VRU helps injured workers to restore their income, it reduces the risk to the employer that the employer when the individual was initially injured, but also the insurer to have less of a costly claim. So just wanted to highlight that work. Another highlight from our workers' compensation unit is from our compliance records and training unit within workers' compensation. In spring of 2024, our compliance unit identified self-insured employers and claim administrators that had an unusually high number of prohibited practice penalties, which are assessed for egregious claim handling conduct. We developed individualized ad hoc training for those specific payers. That training developed totaled over 3 hours and was given over 2 days. It was customized to help those specific payers come into compliance. And following that customized training, prohibited practice penalties assessed against those payers dropped sharply and significantly. So we know that taking the time to identify compliance issues and to specifically address those with specified training has really helped, and that's one of the things we strive to do at the department. The final workers' compensation highlight I wanted to talk about is related to our special compensation fund. Our special compensation fund exists within the department to provide coverage for people or for employees who are injured on the job when their employers do not have workers' compensation insurance. So there is no insurance company to come in and make sure that those medical costs and wage losses are covered. So in this highlight, an employee sustained a serious injury involving a meat grinder, a piece of machinery that the individual had not received proper training to operate. The employer did seek medical treatment, but because the employer was uninsured with workers' compensation benefits, at the time of the injury, the employee filed a claim with the Special Compensation Fund. The fund accepted liability for the claim, and the employee, through that, received wage loss benefits, medical management services, and return to work assistance. The claim resolved with a settlement paid to the employee with future medical benefits. The Special Compensation Fund then had to pursue reimbursement from the employer, the uninsured employer, for the amount of money that the Special Compensation Fund paid out on behalf of that injured worker. So just highlighting one of the important aspects that we have within our division through the Special Compensation Fund. The final thing I want to highlight related to our workers' compensation division within the department is the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, of which there are a number of members in the room, so I will acknowledge that as well. The Workers' Compensation Advisory Council recommends legislation pertaining to workers' compensation and advises the department in carrying out the purposes of the Work Comp chapter. There are 6 representatives on that council, each from labor and from business. And by law, the Work Comp Advisory Council approval requires near consensus of the members. It needs the support of a majority of both labor and business delegations. And this council was really formed because there were decades of contentious legislation initiatives related to workers' compensation, and really it was an informal agreement to place the responsibility for resolving those differences before in the hands of those that were most affected by the statutory changes, meaning the labor community and the business community. I chair the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council meetings. We have one on Wednesday. Anybody who is interested is welcome to attend. They are open meetings, and those are posted. Right, moving on to our Construction Codes and Licensing Division. The Construction Codes and Licensing Division develops and enforces construction-related health and safety codes for the construction of buildings. The division also licenses boiler operators, electricians, electrical and technology systems contractors, elevator constructors, high-pressure piping pipe fitters, manufactured home installers, plumbers, plumbing contractors, power limited technicians, residential building contractors, remodelers, and roofers, and the division also certifies building officials. One function of the Construction Codes and Licensing Division is to proctor licensing exams for licensed building and construction trades. And so our highlight is really bringing attention to some of the work we've done to make those exams more accessible to individuals who are living all around the state. So to efficiently serve stakeholders, the CCLD licensing unit now has two exam proctors assigned to cover the northern and southern portions of the state, in addition to a designated exam proctor who coordinates exams directly at the Department of Labor and Industry office in St. Paul. This represents an exam staffing structure changed from previous years, wherein one exam proctor traveled throughout the state with a limited amount of time and involved a significant amount of travel. So due to this change, exams are now offered and administered regularly at during times of high demand in numerous municipalities, including Detroit Lakes, Moorhead, Duluth, St. Cloud, Bemidji, Virginia, Rochester, Mankato, Wilmer, Marshall, and Winona. In 2024, the CCLD licensing unit proctored over 9,000 exams, with approximately 6,000 of those happening in St. Paul and almost 3,500 in those other locations around the state. Next, we're going to move on to our Labor Standards Division within the department. The Labor Standards Division ensures workers are paid correctly, and workplace rights and responsibilities are enforced for all workers. The division also educates employers and employees about their rights under Minnesota employment laws. The areas that this division regulates and oversees are child labor, earned sick and safe time, misclassification, overtime protections, minimum wage, prevailing wage, wage theft, and the provisions of the Women's Economic Security Act. Just to highlight a little bit about the numbers that came out of the Labor Standards Unit in calendar year 2024, the unit returned more than $2.25 million in unpaid wages. That is what the unit was able to collect. We assessed far more than that. Some of those cases are still in litigation. Others were not collectible because either due to bankruptcy or an employer that has not paid. But it is a huge amount of our work is collecting unpaid wages to the workers around the state that have earned those wages. We've also collected more than $2.1 million in civil penalties for violations of the law, and we've handled more than 23,000 inquiries and questions from stakeholders. I wanted to use this slide to highlight some of the labor standards enforcement actions that have happened over the last calendar year. You'll see through newspaper clippings on this slide, the Department of Labor and Industry took action against Bushel Boy for unpaid wages in the way of overtime. We entered into a consent order where they agreed to pay those unpaid wages and an equal amount in liquidated damages to the affected workers. We've also did an investigation into Sanford, where we found that Sanford cut an employee's hours due to pregnancy and fired her after she requested parental leave. And among monetary relief, we were able to assure that Sanford was going to provide training to their employees around the state about the protections that exist in Minnesota law. We also have on the screen the action we took against Grape Tree Medical. In this case, we entered into a consent order with that company after DLI found the company charged its employees fees for missed or canceled shifts. Under the terms of the consent order, Grape Tree agreed to pay approximately $336,000 in back wages and liquidated damages to more than 900 employees for violating the Minnesota Prompt Payment of Wages Act. And then finally, the last newspaper clip there is related to an investigation into Smithfield Packaged Meats Corporation, where we found that Smithfield employed at least 11 minor children between the ages of 14 and 17, three of whom began working for the company when they were 14 years old. This included being present in hazardous employment in very late evening shifts. We were able to collect a $2 million penalty
from the company for the egregious violations of law that we found. All right, moving on. We are also the department that kind of houses the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. It is a separate board that exists, but the board was created in law during the 2023 legislative session to conduct investigations into working conditions in the nursing home industry and adopt rules establishing minimum employment standards reasonably necessary and appropriate to protect the health and welfare of nursing home workers. The nine-member board consists of three departments that are represented, Department of Labor and Industry, Department of Health, and DHS. And also includes three members representing employers and three members representing employees. On the next slide, you'll see the board has adopted two standards. One is related to wages, but that standard, however, is not in effect because it is dependent upon funding by the state and approval by the federal approval. The earliest this could go into effect is January 1, 2026. The second rule that was adopted is a holiday pay, posting requirements, and certified worker organization rule. This rule did go into effect on January 1. What this rule requires is that nursing home workers who are working on state-recognized holidays receive time and a half for that time. I'm going to move on to our Minnesota OSHA. Minnesota OSHA is the state OSHA plan. So we receive federal money for this program, but it's also received state money for this program. OSHA is kind of separated into two areas. We have OSHA compliance and OSHA consultation. So first I'll highlight OSHA consultation. OSHA Workplace Safety Consultation provides a wide variety of free services, including on-site consultation, training, education, and outreach in general industry and in construction settings. Services are provided by safety and health experts who are highly qualified in occupational safety and health. The consultation unit is really they're the consultation arm of Minnesota OSHA. So the services are completely separate from compliance, which is the enforcement arm of Minnesota OSHA. They do not issue citations, but they, as long as the employer agrees to fix or abate any hazards that are recognized. I did want to highlight one program that is run through our consultation unit, which is the MnSTAR program. Just one of our employers that participates in the MnSTAR program is Melco Tools. They're an employee-owned company in Annandale, Minnesota, but they achieved MnSTAR status in May of 2024. MnSTAR is one of those programs that is basically recognizing employers who want to go above and beyond in safety and health programs within their companies. And so I applaud all of the companies that work with us in both our MnSharp and MnSTAR programs. It really is a great way to engage your workforce and make sure that safety and health is a priority. Okay, moving on to Minnesota OSHA compliance. OSHA compliance enforces the Minnesota Occupational Safety and Health Act and standards that assure safe and healthful working conditions for Minnesota workers. They do this in a number of ways. They help employers comply with safety and health regulations. They conduct workplace inspections and investigations, and they provide technical assistance, training, and outreach. The one thing I wanted to highlight with OSHA compliance is they've, just over the last year, their main goal, of course, and I think everybody would agree with this, is that workers are able to go home at the end of the day in the same shape they came to work at the beginning of the day. So over the last year, Minnesota OSHA has visited over 1,000 establishments, identified over 2,000, almost 3,000 hazards, conducted 80 outreach presentations to almost 4,000 participants, and responded to almost 4,000 phone calls and 3,000 written requests for assistance. All right, moving on to Apprenticeship Minnesota. Apprenticeship Minnesota, housed within the Department of Labor and Industry, is the state's apprenticeship authority under the Minnesota Apprenticeship Act and is recognized by the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Apprenticeship. What this division does is promotes and facilitates the development of quality registered apprenticeship programs that help employers recruit, train, and retain a highly skilled and diverse workforce in Minnesota. The staff at the department conduct compliance reviews to ensure the protection and advancement of apprentices while they are working through the program, and they work to ensure opportunities through apprenticeship for underrepresented Minnesotans, including women, people of color, indigenous people, veterans, and people with disabilities. Just to look at by the numbers in calendar year 2024, we had over 11,000 active apprentices training in Minnesota. There were almost 2,000 apprenticeship completions, and we have 214 registered apprenticeship programs in Minnesota. And I wanted to give one highlight. When people think of apprenticeship, they tend to think of the building and construction trades. But that has been changing, and we have seen apprenticeship move into more emerging industries, is what we call them there. So wanted to highlight, in August of 2023, we saw an early childhood education apprenticeship program. And in 2024, we saw three teacher-registered apprenticeship programs. We know that 84% of school districts report being impacted by teacher shortages, and we believe at the department that teacher apprenticeship is one way to help meet that need that removes some of the barriers that may be present for people who are seeking to go into that profession. And I'm happy that we've got some educators represented on this committee this year. All right, moving on to youth skills training. Youth skills training is one of our workforce development programs at the department. It supports the development of partnerships between schools and employers to provide students 16 and older with classroom instruction, safety training, and paid work experience in high growth, high demand occupations. Grant money is available for these partnerships to create and implement youth skills training programs throughout the state. These locally developed programs are approved, supported, and monitored by the department. Wanted to highlight some of the grant recipients. In rounds 3 and 4, Burnsville School Districts were a recipient of a youth skills training grant. In grant round 7, Hermantown Community Schools were a recipient of that round of grants. So really great program that we help with around the state in making sure kids are getting safe, meaningful work experiences. Next is our dual training pipeline program. This is a program that we partner with the Office of Higher Education on, and this supports employers in building their own dual training programs that strategically combine related instruction with on-the-job training to develop a skilled workforce. It really targets 4 high-growth industry sectors: advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, and information technology. This brings together leaders from industry as well as to identify, define, create, and validate occupational competencies for in-demand careers. Some of the grant recipients highlights there: Pike Lake Dental in Hermantown, Lake County Ambulance Services in Two Harbors, the residents at Northridge in New Hope, Gillette Children's Hospital in St. Paul, and the Minneapolis VA Nursing Home. As you will see, I purposely picked out examples in the districts of the committee members here. So hope you can take that back and work with it. Finally, our last highlight is the Office of Combative Sports. In the Office of Combative Sports, our job is to ensure that Minnesota's combative sporting events are conducted in a manner that minimizes injuries and ensures fair competition. So we regulate things like boxing and professional and amateur mixed martial arts. We also license combatants, corners, officials, promoters, and ringside physicians. So I think that brings me to the end, and I am happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. The Office of Combative Sports, do they have workers' comp coverage as well?
Mr. Chair, I've been asked that question before. If they are employees, but I don't believe that they are, they would be required to have work comp insurance. I don't believe that any of the combatants are employees.
Right,
now, the people, the physician, the ringside physician, people like that who are employed would have that coverage.
Thank you for that on-the-spot thing. I was finding this sort of funny, but I guess we got to know that. Members, any questions as we wrap it up? We do have just a couple minutes. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. 2 years ago, you came before us and talked a lot about the challenges faced in many workplaces and the challenges from your department related to the enforcement of the laws on the books. How is enforcement going? At the time, you mentioned gaps and that there were places that you weren't able to properly enforce the law. So can you give us a look at enforcement within your agency?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, yes, I believe we are in a better place than we have been on our enforcement of many of the employment protections that exist due to much of the work that this this body has done over the past 4 or 5 years, starting with the wage theft legislation back in 2019. And a lot of advancements have been made in many of the areas that we oversee, including adding more inspectors in OSHA, including adding more investigators in labor standards. As I was hoping to kind of highlight through some of the stories that we told, we are out there. We are doing good work. Could there be more good work done if we had more resources? Always. But I do believe that a lot of the challenges that we faced have been addressed through much of the work that's been done over the past however many years.
Representative Schultz, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear that that a lot of that gap has been closed, and I guess I didn't hear from you a big need for a huge amount of additional investment, and especially considering that we have a looming $5 billion deficit because of overspending. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
We have one more member question. I think that Representative Zalesnikar, before we go to you, Representative, maybe a question I had too, Commissioner. You know, as a business person for the last 20 years plus, I certainly, as one person, have recognized the need to keep my workers safe. Workers' compensation is a very big trigger for a lot of us to make sure that our payroll costs are minimized, our insurance companies have come through and done walkthroughs. Can you tell me over the last trends of the last maybe 5-10 years, are we seeing a reduction in workers' comp claims in Minnesota because of this need for us employers to do a better job looking around and having other folks kind of come in there? Are we seeing some positive signs that we're going in the right direction overall?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question, and I'm hoping that I can be fact-checked after I give my answer, but we did the Work Comp Advisory Council recently was given a presentation related to trends in claims, and I believe that the takeaway was that we are seeing fewer claims. I do think that the emphasis that we put on safety, the investments we've made in Minnesota OSHA, the enhancements that we've made to safety and health standards all have had a positive impact on the injuries we are seeing in workplaces around the state and around the country. So I believe the answer is yes, we are seeing a decrease in workers' compensation claims.
Yes. I'll reach back for some more detail about that in the future. So thank you for that. And again, I didn't ask that ahead of time. Representative Zalesnikar, to kind of wrap us up for the day.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
Good. Yes.
My question is quick. The pay that went into effect was January 1st, 2025 for the Nursing Home Standards Board with holiday, in relation to holiday. Nursing homes have had established holiday pay generally at time and a half. Some did double time and had typically 7 holidays. I'm hearing from several nursing homes across the state that the new standards that went into effect with a very fast turnaround, and you can see it's December 9th, 2024, and then it became effective January 1st. But that cost to go to 11 mandated holidays is about $20,000 for a nursing home to pay out. So I'm wondering where in the budget line is the allocation from the legislative body to fund that for the nursing homes. Did that money get transferred somehow through your agency to fund this for the nursing homes?
Sure.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zalesnikar, so I know as part of the process for the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, any of the standards that are put forward are required to have an analysis about whether additional money would need to be appropriated, which is why the minimum compensation standard is not in effect, because that would have required that. The analysis that was done was that the standard related to the holiday pay did not require that. And I will point out that that you are correct. Many of the nursing homes did have time and a half for recognized holidays. It may not have been 11, but the time and a half for the ones that they were paying obviously would meet the standards. And then what was required for the remaining state recognized holidays is that half pay. So that all went into that analysis that was done, and there was no requirement under the law to allocate additional funding.
Real brief, Representative Greenman? No, pass. Okay. It is 10:01. Members, tomorrow we are looking forward to having a very good presentation with the Legislative Budget Office on fiscal notes, along with the Department of Deed as well. So, members, we are adjourned until tomorrow morning, 8:15 a.m. Thank you.